Welcome back to the Missing More Amari podcast. I'm Tim, here today with Lance in Wormtown. What's up, Lance?
Not too much. How are you doing today?
Doing pretty well here in the Crawl Space Studios. Excited to get this information out to the public.
I never thought that I would learn so much about soil. Did you ever think that in your life you would know so much about the composition of soil if you weren't in agriculture?
I didn't even think there were people who knew this much about soil.
We keep raving about Ed and Graham from GB Geotechnics, and the more we hear from them, the more we learn from them, the more significant this scan was. When we went to New Hampshire, we realized that these two guys in that company, they're legit. And to see the scanning and to see the results and to hear their thoughts and their theories on it is very significant in my head.
Yeah, it's really interesting stuff. We are able to kind of cross some of these things off, but some of them raise more questions. So it's really just something we're going to have to wait for some test results and maybe do some further investigating here.
No pun intended, but this is part of the digging process. You said we're going to cross some things off the list, and that's all part of the digging process. That really doesn't mean that what we're doing is not successful. It's actually the contrary. It is successful to cross something off a list. It does raise questions when you hear what they said and you hear the anomaly that they found or anomalies that they found. They're able to explain some of them. They're not able to explain some characteristics of one of them. So they're going to look into that a little more. And we have people out there who listen, who want to know what the results are. And we're going to give you the results as best we can within the legal parameters that we're, you know, responsible to maintain within.
Maybe for the next episode, we should take a step back and kind of just review a lot of this information, because I feel like there's been a lot of information coming forth after this search up in the White Mountains and then that conversation with the parodies. Maybe we should take a step back and kind of break down these bits of information one by one on the next episode. So send in your questions if you've got them. Email us at missingmoramurray@gmail.com.
That's an excellent point, because we're entering into a chapter of this whole journey, a chapter of this podcast where we're going to be getting this information that we've really never dealt with before. So to put it out there in a rapid fire manner just probably isn't the most responsible thing to do. So I think the best thing is, like you said, we're going to put out the information. We're going to let people digest it. If you have questions, email us. We're still digesting it. And some of your questions might be questions that we didn't think that we had until we read them from you guys. So all of the information, all of the communication really needs to be as clear as possible right now in order for us to disseminate stuff and move forward.
Okay, so thank you very much for listening. Please follow us on Twitter at Maura Murray Doc. We're also on Facebook and Instagram as Missing Maura Murray. Thank you very much.
Now, Ed Sewell is the principal of GB Geotechnics, and Graham Henderson is investigation engineer of the same company, GB Geotechnics, located in New York. You two were with us during the GPR scanning of the two locations up in New Hampshire. Can you introduce the company and tell us how you guys got involved with this scanning of those two locations up there?
So our company is GB Geotechnics. We're a, I guess, sort of vaguely multinational. We've got a few offices around the globe. There's two in the UK, two here in the States, and three out in Australia. We're not a huge company globally. There's about sort of 60, 70 people. We specialize in non-destructive investigations. We use various technologies such as ground-penetrating radar, metal detection, various acoustic techniques, thermal imaging, things like that to help us assess structures, historic structures, as well as modern buildings, monuments. We work mainly with engineers and architects to help answer, I guess, problems and questions that may arise when they have them. So in this particular instance, I've been listening to the podcast for I guess probably a couple of years now. Saw that Maggie was she put together the, I think it was a GoFundMe, and saw that she was looking for a firm to do some ground penetrating radar up in New Hampshire. And so I got in touch actually via you guys. I think I shot you an email a few months ago just to sort of introduce our firm and to mention, I guess, sort of talk about how we might be able to help you.
We have to say the timing on that was perfect because we had just put up the GoFundMe. We worked with Maggie on getting the word out there for that. And we had raised, you know, as much money as we thought it would have cost. But you folks approached us and offered it with no charge, free of charge. Well, what made you make that decision?
Well, I mean, it's not something that we do all the time. And it's a case that I was quite familiar with. I think Graham was familiar with it also. It's certainly a very sad story, and it's not really something that I would want to make a profit on. And like I say, because our firm seemed to be relatively well suited to helping perhaps answer some of these questions, I volunteered our services pro bono.
Well, that was really nice.
And it was really a pleasure to do so.
Well, that's great. It was a pleasure to meet you guys and get to know you a little bit and work with you up there. You guys are great, great dudes. And it was, as odd as it is to say, it was even fun at times doing this.
Yes, it was great to meet you guys. And likewise, you're a couple of great chaps.
It was a really great weekend, interesting opportunity, and we're just really happy that we could come up there and get some good, clear results to help answer some of these questions and, really just keep this case moving forward.
I know Tim has referenced Ed as being a catch. I mean, you guys are both a catch.
They're both catches.
They're both catches. But I didn't really realize that Graham was the soil whisperer when we had.
I think you're being a little too kind there.
I don't know. You didn't see yourself when we had that concrete pad tilted up, and you were using the spade to go back and forth and basically talking to the soil, and it was quite a sight to see, and we knew that we were in good hands at that point.
Well, good. Yeah, I have a little bit of archaeological training from grad school, in which I took a couple classes, and then I did a field school. I want to say maybe 8 weeks long, where we did a small excavation. So really, I was just kind of employing those skills. I know just enough, kind of, to get myself into trouble and know when digging and that kind of thing really shouldn't go forward without proper planning.
Yeah. How does that help you? How does that training help you in what we did up there?
You know, we were using the ground penetrating radar a lot, as kind of our primary tool to search, a couple different areas and large areas. And what we're using that for is to find anomalies in the ground. And that could be something that's buried, maybe like a rock, or, some kind of, let's say a utility line or something like that. Or it could just be changes in, kind of the composition of the soil. And so basically once we see something like that, then you can, really start to look at the soil and analyze it. And, so specifically, what we're talking about is underneath the slab, of the deck of the house with that had the trailer. When you're looking at that, basically what you're doing is you're looking for some kind of boundary or change in the soil, and that is kind of caused by a disturbance because not to get too into the scientific detail, but essentially soil is built up over a long period of time. So if you change this soil by, let's say, digging into it, it doesn't matter. You're never going to be able to put that soil back exactly how it was. So you're going to have a change in that soil that can last for sometimes, hundreds of years, depending on, the conditions of where you're at. And so really what I was doing was just kind of scraping off the top centimeter or so with a trowel to kind of clean up and see if we could actually notice any kind of disturbance in the soil.
And before we get to those results, I just want to cover the areas that we searched here. Can you guys describe these all these areas?
Sure. Well, we had several areas at the A-frame house that we were interested in and that we had discussed prior to mobilizing up to New Hampshire. One particular area of interest was the concrete slab within the A-frame house in the closet. Another area that we were interested in was the concrete slab that was about 20 foot by 22 foot or thereabouts outside the A-frame house. And then there was that sort of strange concrete chunk or bench on the other side of the house, the opposite side of the house from the 20 by 22 foot concrete slab. And there was also, we spent a bit of time in the garden of the A-frame with the GPR unit. The other area was, the second day we were there, we were in I guess we're calling it the F house. The particular area of interest there, two areas of interest, I guess. There was the concrete slab at the base of the steps that lead up to the deck at the front of the house, which I gather there had been some suspicion about. And then there was also an area underneath where the prior owner who built the house had, I guess, like a mobile home type trailer that he was living in during its construction at the time when Maura went missing, from what I understand. So we used the radar to scan the ground at that location where the trailer had been.
So let's go through these one by one, I guess, and talk about your findings.
Sure. So I guess we should start at the beginning. I guess the first thing we did, which was remove some concrete out of the A-frame house in the closet under the stairs and the concrete slab. So we drilled a series of holes. We actually began by scanning the floor with the radar to get a sense of how thick that slab was. We had originally planned to take a core, but we figured actually that it would probably be easier and we'd probably get better data by removing a larger surface area. So we removed what I think was probably about a 10 square inch, so a 10 by 10 inch patch of concrete, which I gather the previous owner had sprayed some luminol on the floor, and this is where that luminol showed that there had been some ponding. So we drilled a series of holes and chiseled that concrete out, and we sampled it at various depths. Graham, that was the process, right?
Yeah, that's basically what we did. Kind of the idea is concrete is naturally porous to various degrees, and so the idea is even if somebody had cleaned up or wiped something, that doesn't mean that something hadn't kind of been absorbed into the concrete itself. So by pulling up a section of 2.5 inches deep, and we can send this off for any kind of testing that needs to be done.
We did notice that there was that there were air pockets in the concrete. So it seemed to me like if indeed this was where something had happened, there is a chance that that it might have been absorbed into that concrete.
Now, did you see any noticeable discoloration in the chunks of concrete that were bagged?
I didn't, but the lighting isn't great in there.
This isn't really our area of expertise, really, and I'm not entirely sure what organic matter might look like once it's been absorbed into concrete, and what that concrete might then look like after 15 years. I guess we'll just have to wait for the results of the test to come back, as far as that's concerned.
And a little detail that I appreciated seeing was taking the dust from inside the vacuum cleaner as you were drilling, you were sucking up the dust that was coming up. That's even bagged, and that's going to be sampled as well, which is pretty reassuring. So whose idea was that? Because that was a good idea.
It's a sort of a standard approach that we have, really. Just make sure that we bag up all of the material that we're moving. extracting out. I also wasn't entirely sure of how whoever's going to be testing this concrete is going to test it, and so probably thought it was just a good idea to collect as much as possible out of that area.
So that's the A-frame closet, and of course, along with the concrete samples we took and you guys gathered for us, we took some parts of the wall panel and the wall behind the panel, and so those are going to be tested at some point. So that's the A-frame closet there. Was there anything else that was performed inside that closet?
Two things that we might want to mention. One is using the boroscope when we, I believe we included that in our report on page 18, that the current owners, I believe, had noticed that their dog was sniffing the step at a specific location. And so we took some photographs of the underside of the steps. It's a wooden staircase going up to the second floor. Again, I'm not really sure what, you know, what I'm looking at, but it looks to me like there's some sort of staining on the wood at about the location that this dog had been sniffing. That might be a slight thing that you might want to look at in the future.
Yeah, and just it's only a small stain, a couple inches maybe. Without pulling up that step or pulling out the wall of the paneling, you know, that's something that we can't really get a sample of. But you know, it is interesting.
Now, what else? What was the next thing? Was it the slab, the big slab outside, or the bench?
Right. So next was the bench, I think, wasn't it? We went and had a look at it. It did look a little bit odd to me. It's a very large chunk of concrete. It looked like it had been cast to some extent in a form, i.e. it was kind of smooth on you know, the front face and a couple of the longer faces. The ends of it, the two ends, didn't look like it had been cast to me. So it almost looked like a sort of a middle piece of a much longer or just a longer piece of concrete. It didn't have any reinforcement. Not entirely sure where it came from, what it was, but it certainly looked strange to me that it was cast. You know, you could see the form on a few sides, just not at the ends, which was the first thing that struck me about it. We managed to, several of us, shift it. So there was an idea, I think, that maybe it had been placed there for a specific purpose to perhaps hide something underneath. We rolled it out of the way and then scanned the ground with the radar. And again, we didn't see anything that was of particular interest. We did see a little anomaly, and we probed down to it, and it was a large rock. So that was about all we saw there. It looked to me like it had probably been placed there. It was a little sort of clearing, and it looked like maybe the owners or previous owners had maybe had a fire pit around there at one point. It looked to me like there was sort of a few little strategic stones and things that had been put around there. So that might have been its purpose. But where it came from, I have no idea. It could very well have been residual concrete that was left over from, you know, pouring the slab of the house, or perhaps this other larger slab that's outside the A-frame.
Okay, so let's talk about that one. What did you guys find in the big slab?
To kind of orient everyone, basically it's a large concrete slab, and it's about 22 by 20 feet or something along those lines. And there's one of the corners, you can see what we assumed was the edge, the underside of the slab. And so that measured to be about 11 inches. So it's, you know, it's a big, thick slab. But actually, once we did GPR, we're kind of interpreting that the slab is actually closer to 18 inches thick. So it's, you know, this is some serious foundation work. But so some of the things that we noticed when we did the GPR was that it has structural reinforcement, and that would be in this case, not rebar, but things like that. We think it's actually a kind of a metal mesh that you lay down for structural reinforcement. What's interesting about it is the reinforcement doesn't cover the entire slab as you might imagine. It actually basically divides the slab into equal thirds. So you have sort of reinforcement, and then you have about a 7-foot gap where there's no reinforcement, concrete all the way through, and then you have the remainder of the slab is then reinforced. So that type of reinforcement can make it a little bit more difficult for the ground penetrating radar to see below it. And that's just sort of the way that the radar, I guess you could say, just reflects off of that metal. But we were, you know, able to still pick up things of interest below it. We kind of picked out three things in particular. One of them we're pretty sure we can rule out as just kind of one of those post holes that you noticed that you've mentioned on previous podcasts. Just basically when the GPR went directly over top of it, it kind of, you know, shoots a big spike.
Like a PVC tube, one of these PVC tubes that appears to have been cast into the concrete.
Then there were two others which were kind of larger anomalies, and by large we mean maybe about 2 feet. If you wanted to, I guess, kind of cube it off, you would say 2 by 2 by 2, something like that. These are right at where we're seeing the back of the slab, or slightly punching through what would be the back of the slab. And that, you know, there's a lot of different things that could be. The geology of the area is very rocky. It's former glacial. So, and right next to the slab, there's a bunch of big stones. So just because there's some kind of thing that we're seeing doesn't mean it's necessarily anything nefarious. Really, I guess one of the big questions is just trying to track down when this slab was made.
Can you tell us about how you would age or date concrete like this?
It would be difficult to age this concrete precisely, but there are a couple of techniques that you can use to get an approximate age on concrete. It would involve collecting some samples. The first process would be to perform some petrography and chemical analysis of the concrete. It would involve taking some samples, sending them off to a testing lab, of which there are several that we use in our line of work, not for aging concrete necessarily, but there are various types of tests that you do on concrete, strength testing, compressive stresses, and that sort of thing. So petrography will give you an idea of the makeup, what was in the concrete. From that, you can sort of get an idea of how this concrete might have weathered. So it's a way of potentially dating concrete, but you need to have quite a lot of information, you know, about sort of the area that the concrete was from, how exposed it is. You know, all these sort of things will come into effect. I think with petrography, you might be able to get somewhere within 5 to 10 years, possibly, of within when that concrete was poured. There's another test, which would be carbonation, that we do, which again is another laboratory test that could give us an idea, maybe sort of within a decade or so of when the concrete was poured. None of these things are going to give you the exact date, unfortunately, and it is always a bit of a guessing game. But petrography would probably be the most successful at getting a fairly good age range of the concrete.
Right. So what you're saying is if you were to do that test and it could get it to, say, 5, 6, 7 years.
So we could sort of work out, you know, is this concrete from around about 2004, 2005, or is it, you know, closer to 1994, 1995, or is it even, you know, maybe 1950s, or is it that sort of thing? These techniques are probably going to, you know, get you somewhere in the ballpark of the age of that material, yeah.
And then I guess based on that, then you determine, is it worth it to go actually identify what those anomalies are underneath it?
Exactly. And, okay. And that's where it would get a little bit more tricky, really, because, you know, we had originally planned to take some cores through the concrete and then, using a soil sampler, sample down to any anomalies. That's something that we could try to do here, but we had Well, you know, it's difficult to soil through a soil that has a lot of stones in it, simply. So it might even be an idea to kind of cut a larger hole through the concrete slab and actually try to maybe sort of shovel down to the sort of the anomalies that we're seeing.
After dating them, like Lance said, if it was proven to have been poured, say, approximately around 2005 or after, that would make these anomalies extra interesting. But have you guys seen things like this in your work, like anomalies, quote unquote, as this? Like, is this what big stones underground look like?
Well, I would say, so the examples that we've given you in the report, anomaly one, that could be some sort of material boundary, some sort of possibly stone, some large boulder or something below the slab. Anomaly two is a bit more interesting because it's got a sort of a specific shape to it. So it's kind of, it got this sort of hyperbolic shape to it. It also reflects quite well. So it looks less like a stone and more like something that's been buried, perhaps pipe, or it could have been rebar or something metallic, possibly, that's been buried at around about, well, it seems to be, if we're looking at a slab that's potentially 18 inches, it looks like it might be another 6 inches below that. And then the anomaly three that we've highlighted is a larger anomaly. Again, it's below the slab. And that, you know, it's about all we can tell, really. It's a large response that's below the slab. It doesn't look like a boulder. It looks like something more kind of structural than that.
This might be a good time to kind of walk the listeners through what GPR data looks like.
That'd be great.
So we kind of talked over the weekend, you know, I had kind of mentioned, you know, if you think about the beginning of like Jurassic Park, where they're looking at the dinosaur bones and they shoot that pulse into the ground and boom, they get a nice picture of what the dinosaur is. And that's completely not at all what we're dealing with, unfortunately. Instead, it's better to think of this as like a layer cake, that you're looking at a slice of it. So you're seeing the different layers. And when you see an anomaly, it can kind of manifest itself in a couple different ways. So ideally, for something large, you're going to see a nice clear hyperbola or you know, hump, wave. Or, you know, you might see, in the case of reinforcement or rebar, or in this case what we think is the mesh, you're going to see some close together little humps that are evenly spaced out. Or in the case of some of the other anomalies that we're going to talk about, it's you're looking at kind of the layers of the cake suddenly being kind of jumbled up. Like if you had taken a spoon and, you know, dug something up and then tried to pack it back down, you're not going to have those nice clean layers anymore. And it depends on a lot of different factors. And, you know, sometimes you have to run it through the computer software and pull out a lot of the noise and basically add contrast and that kind of thing. At the end of the day, it really does come back to interpretation. And that's kind of the point of doing things non-destructively. You do your training and take your time and pay attention to the data and try and make your best interpretation based on that data. So that you can kind of target your resources moving forward.
Yeah, that's awesome. Because we're looking at the images that you sent in the PDF, and it does take a little bit to wrap your head around. Like, am I looking at a cross-cut like profile, or am I looking straight down? And, you know, once you identify that you're looking at a profile, you can see where there are consistent sort of red and blue waves, and then where, you know, you'll see this like bulge or something that signifies a disturbance or some sort of anomaly. Once you do wrap your head around that, I think things become a lot more clear. And that was a really good description of that. So thanks.
It's kind of like you know, the Matrix, where you're looking at all the green things flashing through on the screen, and then suddenly, as you get used to it, suddenly it just starts to make sense to you.
On the last episode that we had of this podcast, we talked about the other side of the yard and there was an anomaly potentially underground that wasn't related to the septic tank or the leach field, which is part of the septic system. But in this PDF, you guys are now saying that it actually is highly likely that that anomaly on the opposite side of the yard of the big slab is likely a septic tank or leach field.
Right. So when we were doing this scanning, there was an idea that the leach field was potentially close to where we were scanning, but there was an idea that it was a little bit closer to the road, closer to the A-frame house driveway, and that it didn't extend to where we were seeing this. But you know, now we've run this data through our programs. We've got rid of some of the noise. And actually, we've looked at examples of previous surveys where we've scanned the ground and seen things like leach fields and septic tanks. And I've got to say, this just looks really, really close to what you would expect to see from a leach field.
Okay, great.
Yeah, that's good news.
Yeah. At least we know that it's likely not something to further investigate, so we can pretty much cross that one off. Lance, as you know, this podcast today is sponsored by Hubble Contacts. And I have no experience personally with Hubble Contacts because I have perfect vision.
You, I heard, have better than perfect vision.
That's true. That's actually true. Someone told me 15-15 doesn't work.
As opposed to 20-20?
Yeah.
Yeah, I don't know. We're going to have to do a little research on that. I think I have 20-40 vision. So I think that's borderline legally blind.
But what if I told you, Lance, that you could get a fresh pair of contacts every single stinking day for less than you pay right now?
I'd tell you to get out of the room because you're a lying son of a bee.
And before I left the room, I would show you HubbleContacts.com.
Right. The only answer to this would have been HubbleContacts.com. That's what I was thinking.
Right, because 60 contacts are $33. Do the math, that's barely a dollar a day. This is way more affordable than other brands.
You know, I know that I've used Hubble Contacts. I've once described them as putting dipped contact lenses in olive oil and then putting them on your eye. That might have been a little irresponsible of me. You should not do that. But these are quality daily lenses, and as you said, for a better price. And if you don't have a prescription, they can send you to an optometrist if you don't have a prescription. They could do that today. Everyone knows about Hubble. They're featured in Vogue, GQ, TechCrunch, Mashable. Don't mash your contact lenses, though.
So no more overpaying or overwearing. Go to HubbleContacts.com to get your first 2 weeks of lenses for free.
That's 15 pairs of lenses for free. That's one for each eye.
So go to HubbleContacts.com and see the difference.
Oh, I get it. See.
Yeah. Make sure to select our show, Missing Maura Murray, at checkout.
That's Hubble, HUBBLE, contacts.com. 15 pairs of lenses. Free.
So let's move on to the F house. It's Rick's former house. And the first anomaly, or I should say the first thing that we were looking at, was that deck step landing. Sort of right before you get up to the stairs to the deck, there was a piece of concrete that was poured, and we had heard maybe that was something to check. And what were your findings on that?
Well, it was a very large lump of concrete. From what I understand, there was the owner who lived in this house. Initially, there wasn't a concrete slab there, and that the stairs up to the deck, which is how you get into the front door, which is sort of raised up, there wasn't a concrete slab. And so I guess the steps up to the deck were just sort of resting on soil or you know, grass or whatever. So there was a story that out of the blue one day, he just sort of turns up unannounced and pours this big concrete slab. And I guess for that reason, it was a bit suspicious. So we scanned it. There's quite large reinforcement in the concrete, which was I guess it showed that whoever was pouring this really knew what they were doing. The slab is very thick, maybe 8 or 10 inches thick.
Seven and a half, 8 inches, something like that.
It really struck me as you know, whoever poured that really knew what they were doing, and they wanted to have something that would stand the test, you know, the test of time. Once we levered it up, which was quite a lot of hard work, it was probably a good 1,000 pounds, this thing, and so Graham could have a good look underneath it. But we did lever it up. It looked to me like it had possibly been cast in place, so you could see the underside of the concrete was, you know, it didn't look like it had been poured on a flat surface. It looked like it had been poured on the bare earth. It was kind of a rough surface on the underside of the slab that pretty much matched the soil underneath it. So other than it being kind of over-engineered for its purpose, it didn't really strike me as being anything that was particularly odd. It was just, you know, a rather large piece of concrete for what it was, I guess, there to do, which was just to, you know, support a couple of steps.
All right, very good. And then we maneuvered that little pad, that concrete pad, back into place. But before we actually did that, or sort of simultaneously, you were running the GPR over the lawn itself, and there's some interesting findings there. Can you fill us in a bit on that?
Yeah. Okay. So, right next to the driveway was an area that we had been told that that's where the trailer, the mobile home, used to be, kind of that area. And I guess there was some speculation that, you know, maybe something had been possibly buried underneath there, something like that. So we wanted to do a decent sized survey area of that, and, you know, just kind of see what we could see. So we did an area about, we'll call it 15 by 35, 40, something like that, feet. We were able to kind of find the septic tank, and we were able to find the stone pad walkway. You know, it was pretty clear and evident to find, so that helps orient us and everything like that. And then we see some pretty good, nice clear data of what the soil matrix, the layout of the different layers of the soil are. And that's pretty clear. And then we do kind of find an anomaly in the area where the trailer mobile home used to be. And to kind of describe what this is, what it looks like, it's about a 4 foot wide by 4 foot wide by, let's call it, 1 foot high anomaly. And it's not like what we had talked about, where it was, you know, a clear hyperbola, you know, something hard that the radar is bouncing off of. So it's, you know, it's not like a crate or a box or anything like that. Instead, it's really just an area where, when you're looking at the soil responses around it, it's suddenly a lot of changes are going on with this patch. So the layers are kind of all jumbled up. You can see a very nice clear boundary below it, and kind of where there isn't any sort of disturbance to the sides of it. And the soil above it, the layers are less compact and thicker. It starts at about 12 inches deep and goes to about 24 inches deep, which is interesting because we kind of stumbled across this anomaly, and so we decided to take a soil sample right next to it, and we could really only get to about 12 inches deep with our soil sample before we hit a gravel layer, which then, looking at the data, you can kind of see where that is. So actually, the anomaly kind of breaks through, or at least it appears to break through kind of this layer of gravel. It is something of interest, and it really did kind of catch our eye.
Okay. What is, and I have two questions, what is indicative of the shape, the squared off edges? Because you said it's not something that would be a box or a crate, but when you look at the cross section, the profile, it does look like it has squared off edges. So what is indicative of that? And also, what is indicative of a thicker topsoil layer?
Again, we're looking at a profile. So you kind of lose that three-dimensionality. And if you kind of, I guess, stack several of these profiles behind it, it is kind of squared off. Not perfectly, but something that really doesn't appear to be natural. So something that could cause that would be if you were digging something and you dug generally straight down with squared off edges as opposed to digging just like a ditch, that would kind of give you those unnatural sudden changes. Because then once you backfill that soil again, you're not ever going to get those perfect layers again. And as far as the change in the topsoil, again, that looks, to me at least, it looks like some kind of backfill, where because you don't have the same, I guess, weathering or soil buildup that you do everywhere else, things like weather and water erosion that are going to form these soil layers, this looks like something that hasn't really experienced that in the same way that everything around it has.
Not a box, not a crate, and it doesn't look like a typical big stone or kind of boulder type situation.
No, to me it looks like, as Graham's described, it looks like someone's dug like a 5-foot by 5-foot square hole in the ground. So that's the type of an anomaly that we're seeing, and it's then been filled in. And so what we're seeing in the data is a kind of, you know, 5-foot by 5-foot by however many inches deep. And so that's what we're picking up in the radar. It's not a hyperbolic response, so it doesn't look like there's, you know, something that's reflective in there. It's more a sort of a disturbance in the ground that has clearly defined edges to it, which again would lead us to think that it's like a trench, like something's been dug down in a relatively sort of square method.
In your experience, have you ever seen anything like this that you can compare it to? Or is there anything in the area that you can look at and say, in the immediate area, oh, it makes sense for this trench-like or this square-like hole to be here and then filled in?
Well, I mean, there's a road. It's the driveway is right next to it. So it could be something to do with the creation of the driveway. I don't know what that would be necessarily. Also, Fred was there with us, and he showed us where he remembered this trailer being. And this is kind of slap bang in the middle of that. I have no idea what type of trailer this was, whether it was some sort of construction trailer, or maybe it was like a mobile home or like a caravan or something. It's very difficult for us to say what this is, other than it's an anomalous response in the radar data that looks different to everything else within that area that we scanned. As Graham said, about 15 feet by about 40 feet. This is a 5-foot by 5-foot relatively squared off anomaly that we can see right where the trailer was.
Another thing that can change the way soil looks without actually penetrating the soil itself is water. So if, you know, there was some kind of structure over this, maybe, you know, the way a roof goes or a drain goes, over time, that concentration of water in a certain area is going to change that particular area compared to everything around it. So, you know, it is possible that water dripping off or running off for 10 years in the same area, that can change the way the water is absorbed into the ground. And once it reaches something like a gravel area or a clay boundary or something like that, the water is just going to move differently. And so that can change sort of the way that the radar passes through it changes the speed at which it passes through, which then obviously changes the picture that we're getting back.
Okay, so just to be clear here, this isn't the rocks that were leading up to the deck or potentially leading up to where his trailer laid, and it's not a septic tank for this trailer. If there was a septic tank there, would you have been able to see that, identify that?
We would probably be able to see if this was, you know, if there was a trailer near here, and maybe this was where an outhouse was. Maybe this was a hole that was dug for that purpose. I'm not sure. I don't know whether that would require a 5-foot by 5-foot hole. You might want to look into that. All we can really say, this is away from the house. So the house was built in 2004 or 5 when it was completed. The septic system that's currently there, we have identified in the radar data. The leach field, the current owners of the house know where their leach field is, and it's nowhere near this area. And this also has got nothing to do with the kind of the rocky pathway that leads up to the front of the house. This is away from all of those things.
Okay. Now, what if Rick did connect some kind of plumbing system inside the trailer to the septic tank that's kind of across the yard? Could this anomaly account for any underground construction to do with that?
I mean, it certainly could, and which is why I'm very apprehensive about saying what this is. All we can really say it is an anomaly that we're seeing within the area that we scanned.
So in your professional opinion, what is the next thing to do?
So the soil sample that we did here, we managed to get down to about 12 inches or thereabouts, and that's when we hit this gravel. I think it would be a wise idea to actually dig a slightly larger hole down to that gravel layer. Have a look at what sort of gravel it is. Is it natural, or is it something like a crushed rock, perhaps? Is it something that is maybe natural, or is it something that's maybe put there deliberately? And then maybe where we did the soil sample in the same location, dig down below that and maybe see if we can sample some of the soil there and test that.
Graham, do you agree with that?
I would agree. I would say, first get the sample that we did take, get that tested, because if that comes back with something interesting, then, you know, this becomes a priority, obviously. But I would say that it would be okay to do kind of a larger, I guess, shovel test size, you know, so maybe a foot in diameter, just kind of, you can punch that straight down. That'll allow you to get through that gravel layer. But I would not recommend putting anything directly through where we see the anomaly, but immediately adjacent to it, you're probably okay. And the reason for that is, again, soil change is there because it was changed. You can't do any kind of excavation and then redo it. Once you've done it, you've changed now the soil again forever. And so if you're not being careful, you know, you could potentially ruin something very important. So I would just say exercise caution.
Yes, that's excellent advice. Pardon my ignorance on this, but when you're looking at these cross-section profile views of the anomaly, you wouldn't see something that would be buried there if there was something buried there, correct? If there, let's say someone buried a television set, you wouldn't see the outline of a television set, would you?
You wouldn't necessarily be able to see that it was a television set, no. But the thing with a television's made with, you know, plastic, it's made with metal. Those are all amazing reflectors. So you would see very clearly in the data that this is something that's made from those types of materials, and you would see that being reflected back to the receiver. You'd see that in the radar data. So this looks more like a sort of a homogeneous response, right? So there's nothing in there that looks like a television set. There's nothing in there that looks like it's a whole load of metal trash and garbage. It looks like a change in the soil. What I would say is that if organic matter is put in there 15 years ago, we're not going to see that organic matter. That organic matter is going to have homogenized with the soil around it, which is so what we're really going to see is that change in the soil, which is what we were trying to do here. We were trying to see if there were these changes in the soil that might then lead us to think that, you know, perhaps something organic was buried there at one point.
And also, some of the things that some of the questions that are still out there are, cell phones and backpacks or just other personal effects. Those are things that are also, pretty small and would be very, very difficult for us to pick up or at least notice them as opposed to something else around it. Again, so we're not going to see, the idea of the TV was a great example, but we're also not going to be able to specifically see, something smaller specifically.
Okay, so you wouldn't even be able to tell if there, for example, was a backpack in there. It would look the exact same as this looks?
Actually, the backpack would be even more difficult to see than something made of plastic and metal. The reason for that is it's a matter of the way that radar waves pass through and reflect off different materials.
Any thoughts to this point on this work that you guys would like to add?
I'm really looking forward to hopefully getting some information back on the samples that we collected. I think if you combine that with the GPR work that we did, I think, hopefully that kind of really answers some things about it, which was kind of my ultimate goal, was getting answers to either confirm or eliminate things so that, this doesn't stay bogged down, so it keeps moving forward. So I'm really happy that I was able to kind of contribute to that, and if I can help out in the future, I would be more than happy to.
I just hope that we haven't added more confusion and frustration to what is already kind of a confused and frustrated thing here.
Have you seen what's been going on the past few years? I think what you've done in mere weeks has not only cleared up some confusion, it will have gone a long way to eliminate locations.